Blog Talk Radio.
Episode number 40 of Sports Heaven with Mark and Evan. We sum up the draft for the Giants and Jets. We talk about the first two games of the New York Rangers. We talk about the New York Knicks. Isaiah Thomas was fired as coach. And, of course, the Yankees and Mets to help us out. Jim Baumbach joins us. All that and more coming your way next on Sports Heaven with Mark and Evan. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to episode number 40 of Sports Heaven with Mark and Evan. A great show in store for you tonight. I'm Mark Elliott.
And I'm Evan Brandoff, and we have a very special guest, our favorite guest on the show. Mr. Jim Baumbach has joined us for how many times?
This is the fifth edition of the Baumbach Buzz. This is the fifth time Jim Baumbach is joining us, and we'll get to him momentarily.
New day, every day.
All right, so he's with us right now, and Jim Baumbach, thank you so much again for coming on the show tonight.
No problem. Thanks for having me, and I'm very happy to celebrate episode number 40 with you guys.
Yeah, we're very happy too. It's been a long ride, and you have been a big part of making this show happen. And thank you very much.
No problem. Thanks again for having me.
All right. Well, we know that you're busy and you have some things to attend to, so we will get started right away. And I want to start off with the NFL draft that started yesterday and concluded today. And we'll start with the New York Giants. And their first pick was a safety, Kenny Phillips. And, you know, he's kind of a big guy who can make plays. They don't think he's that fast, though. He might transition into, you know, maybe he could go into a cornerback. But not using his ability all the time. He is good at tackling. Jim, what are your thoughts on the first overall pick for the New York Giants, Kenny Phillips?
You know what? I mean, the NFL draft, I don't get hyped up for it because I feel like no matter who the Jets and Giants drafted, you're going to hear the same thing that, you know, this was the guy we wanted. We were waiting for this guy to be around. I mean, so what I kind of look at is I look at position. I mean, they drafted a safety. I can't tell you much about this guy, you know, except for what I've read today. I didn't know him before the last, like, 3 or 4 days when I started reading mock drafts and stuff like that. But you know what? He's a safety. The Giants obviously need help there, and in the strong safety area and the cornerback help. You know, they definitely need help. You know, basically in the back end of the defense. So I do like that move in that sense. I'll tell you what, from the Giants draft perspective, I think what I was looking for was, is Jeremy Shockingham traded? And that was the story that I was looking forward to seeing yesterday. It was very, very fascinating. Jerry Reese, the general manager of the Giants, didn't, you know, held his little press conference with reporters right after the Saints picked. I think it was at number 40, because that was obviously the pick that seemed like was going to be the centerpiece of the trade for Shockey. And they didn't reach a trade. And, you know, I don't know this, but just based on the way the phrasing of Reese's statements afterwards, it sure seemed like, okay, it looks like Shockey's going to be the tight end for going into the season. Now, anything can change, obviously, but right now it looks that way, and I think that's the biggest development coming from the draft, more so than who they drafted.
Yeah, I guess you make a good point, and the safety certainly was big. Of course, the Giants did get Sammy Knight, and they also still have James Butler. So I don't know if this safety, Kenny Phillips, will make his way into the lineup as a rookie. He may. I think he could win a spot over James Butler for sure. But it's tough to say. Do you have any thoughts on that perspective?
No, you know what? I mean, I think it presents a competition, without a doubt. You know, it's hard to really – I mean, you know what? He's a first-round pick, so he's going to get first-round money, even though he's the last pick in the first round. And when you get first round money, you know, the team is going to do everything they can to make this guy succeed. Now, that said, you know, are they going to give him the starting spot right off the bat? I don't know about that, but it definitely is going to be a competition. And you know what? I mean, like you said, I do think he's better than Butler right off the bat. Does he win the spot? And, you know, it's tough to say. He's definitely walking into a great situation because he's going to the Super Bowl champs.
And we'll move over to the Jets' first pick. I want to talk about the first two picks for each team, so we'll go to the Jets' first pick, and then we'll do the number two picks. The first pick, you know, speaking of positions, is defensive end Vernon Golston. And the Jets, all, you know, they have Sean Ellis and Coleman, but they picked Vernon Golston first overall. So what are your thoughts on the Jets picking a defensive end?
You know what? It looks like this guy fits their system, and I think that's the most important thing. You know, going forward is that, you know, this Mangini Tannenbaum regime right now, I mean, it's basically taken them 2 years to really, you know, get rid of the guys that they were dead set on running the 3-4 and going forward with this defense. And, you know, now we've seen, you know, Dwayne Robertson, Jonathan Vilma. I mean, we're seeing these guys, you know, disappear, the guys that, you know, were, you know, either drafted high or looked good in the Jets system, you know, in the previous regimes. You know, now they're instead of trying to rework their system, now they're drafting for their system. So I do trust their picking in the sense that they're picking guys to succeed in their system. This guy overall, I mean, the thing that seemed most discouraging about him, and this is only what I've read just in the scouting reports, but that he's been known for taking off plays, sometimes taking off games. You know, his head wasn't always into it. You know, that's always something you don't like to see. Maybe the Jets feel they can, you know, get him on the right track. But obviously, with the pick so high, you know, you don't really want a risk factor. You want someone who's a slam dunk. I mean, I think all Jets fans, though, were hoping that McFadden was going to drop him, and obviously it didn't work out that way.
Yeah, I agree with you. Do you think that the Jets should have tried to trade up in order to get McFadden?
I would not, if they did that, I would not have opposed that. I would have said, you know what, this is the right move, because you know what, he's a player, he's a name player, he's a player that you're going to go to the games to watch, and the Jets don't really have that, you know, star player on the offense. You know, Thomas Jones obviously had a disappointing first year with the Jets. Their quarterback situation is very much a question mark right now. Even receivers, it's not like they have any glitz or anything like that right there. So, yes, I mean, he would have been the face of their offense. And I think, can I say that they should have traded up to him? I don't know, because it probably would have taken a lot, considering how high he went. People thought he was going to drop. He obviously went to the first team that was, willing to look for offense. I think it would have taken a lot. It probably would have taken too much. But had they done it, I would not have had a problem with it.
Now, with the Jets' quarterback situation with Chad Pennington and Colin Clemens, do you think that either of these two quarterbacks can carry them to a successful season? I mean, you saw Colin Clemens last year. He didn't seem to do that well, and Chad Pennington, it looks like his arm is just getting too weak.
Yeah, I don't like either of them. I mean, I think at best they're a type of guy that's going to, you know, maybe take you to an 8-8 season, maybe a 9-7. Even if they can somehow go 10-6, they're not the answer. I mean, they're a short-term fix. They're a plug. And sooner or later, they're going to have to find that quarterback. And, you know, it is disconcerting that, you know, they're going to build the team first, then look for the quarterback, which is fine. But you don't want to then get a quarterback out of college, let's say next year or year after, and then he's going to have to work his way into the system for 2 or 3 years. I mean, this is a plan that, you know, especially with parity in the NFL, you want to be able to succeed. And right now, I mean, I don't think, maybe they can be successful, but I cannot see Chad Pennington or Kellen Clemens leading to the Jets to a playoff victory right now.
And another thing that a quarterback needs, besides an arm and stuff, you know, they also need protection. And the second pick for the Jets, they took a tight end in Dustin Keller. And reading about him, he's a better receiver than he is a blocker. How do you think they'll use the second pick Dustin Keller into that offense? Because it doesn't seem like he'll be able to protect the quarterbacks very well.
Yeah, that's the most questionable pick for me. I mean, just based on positioning and just based on a scouting report. I mean, I saw the same thing, and my eyebrows, you know, raised as well, because it's like, first off, they have Baker. He's got this, the negotiations going on right now. It seems like this is a fallback option in the case that, Baker, if that doesn't work out. But that said, I mean, it's a kind of high pick to be using for someone that's, you know, a fullback option seemingly, and B, you know, he's not a good blocker. And tight ends, especially in the Jets system, it doesn't seem like they've really featured the tight end as a receiver. You know, the Jets system looks like, you know, you really want to protect the quarterback, give him time, you know, and you know, move the chains, obviously. And it's a really surprising pick. You know, I think Mangini Tenenbaum are kind of at a crossroads. I mean, yes, it's only been two full years. The first year has been, you know, a great honeymoon. Second year was a big disaster. I don't think this year is a make or break, but I think this year you have to show progress, number one, and then next year has to be a very competitive year. And if they don't win, say, 10 games, let's say they go 8-8 2 years from now. Let's say this year they go, you know, 6-10 or 7-9, and the year after that they go 8-8. Then you're at the point of saying, you know, what kind of progress are we making? Are we showing, you know, real progress? I mean, this, we're talking about that point. We're talking, it's 2010. I mean, this, you know, you'd like to see more progress or quicker progress than this.
All right, well, I want to move on to another sport now because I know that you are pressed for time. So I want to move on to the New York Rangers right now. And they're losing 2-0 to the Pittsburgh Penguins. They were leading 3-0 in the first game, ended up losing 5-4 today. They were down 1-0. They sealed the deal with an empty netter, the Penguins did. And do you think that the Penguins' extra rest, you know, they swept the first series, do you think that extra rest, you know, you always talk about, did you get a lot of rest or did they get rusty? But do you think the extra rest helped them to get those first two wins?
You know what, I would say not, just because the Rangers had that 3-0 lead. I mean, the Rangers had that first game handed to them, basically. I mean, they not that they handed to them. They did all they could to get that 3-0 lead, without a doubt. But they had it in their hands. They should have won that game. Any hockey team that has a 3-goal lead in a playoff game, you cannot lose that. I mean, that is a no-brainer. That is going to hurt them. I knew right when that happened. I said, oh, my gosh, this is a tough one for the Rangers, especially game one. I mean, game one, the momentum set. I mean, I still think this could be a long series, but you know what? When you're going back home, you're down 2-0, you're facing game three, which is pretty much a must-win. I mean, this is a tough spot, and I have a hard time believing the Rangers players were not, you know, really down after blowing a 3-0 lead, because that's just bad. I mean, that's especially in the fashion they did it. You know, the two goals so quickly, it left a bad taste in my mouth just watching, and I can't imagine how fans felt. And then on top of that, how the players felt. That's a really bad spot. And you know what? I think what hurts the most is they had a golden opportunity. I mean, they would have been up 1-0, and then the pressure's on the Penguins to get one of the home games. And then you know, who knows what happens. I mean, and you know, the Rangers are a check-on-high team. When they're playing well, you know, they look like gangbusters. They look like they can beat anybody. But when they're playing poorly, it's like they struggle to score, and it's one of those funks that the team's in. So we saw it for the whole first half, it seemed like. I mean, this team right now is a tough spot, and you know, we're going to see what they're made of, because right now, down 2-0, coming home, this is tough.
And, you know, what's really interesting, that first game, I mean, it really has to take a lot out of them. I mean, to come out the next day, you'd think you'd have, like, some fire, but to get no goals today, I mean, you're down 1-0, they couldn't do anything. I mean, it was bad. They had a few power play opportunities, but the one thing today also, Marty Straka, I don't know if you got a chance to see the game at all, but he got the puck in the net, but the referee lost sight of the puck and blew the whistle before, so that really hurt him. But, I mean, a bad job by the Rangers after, you know, that bad loss in game one to not score any goals.
Yeah, you know what? I was actually at the Mets game today, so I only saw that the Rangers lost, I think right after the game, after I went down to the clubhouse, came back up, I checked the score, and I didn't hear anything that happened. And then the car coming home, I heard that exact play on the radio, you know, just talking about it. And you know, just it seemed like, just hearing what the Rangers players were talking about in audio and sound clips and stuff, and I haven't read much, it seemed like they actually were not lamenting that call so much. They were almost like looking forward, which, you know, I guess from the Rangers' perspective, that's the only way it can go about it, because you can't change what happened in Pittsburgh. And this is probably the worst case scenario of how things could have turned out.
Now, going into the Mets, you witnessed Delgado's two home runs today. Do you think he's finally starting to come around?
Yeah, and you know what's funny? You're going to read tomorrow in my column for Newsday. I mean, I totally ripped him, because he had the two home runs. It was a great positive day. I mean, everything was working for him. Finally, his first real positive day of 2008. And what does he do? The fans call for a curtain call, and he doesn't come out. I mean, it was an awful snub. It was a very petty thing to do. After the game, he basically said that, you know, he doesn't feel it. He didn't feel it was a curtain call moment, that he's only had two or three in his life, and he didn't think this was worthy of a solo home run in the seventh inning. And that just really befuddled me, because it almost was lost on him what a curtain call is. A curtain call is the fans reaching out to you. And, you know, whether they booed you or not, you know, you have to accept it. You know, this is how, you know, the fans are the fans in New York. They're part of the furniture. They're always going to be there. They're going to boo you when you do bad, and they're going to cheer you when you do good. And you have to accept that. You can't pick a fight up against the fans. And that's what's going on with Delgado right now. And I'll tell you what, if I'm a Mets fan, I'm disturbed by it, because this is, you know, you don't want to be at odds with a player who's so crucial to your season, especially after how bad he struggled so much. And then this year, and today, finally, two home runs. I mean, the second home run was a mammoth shot. I mean, he's off the scoreboard. It was a thick air today. Really, the ball really wasn't going hard. And he just hit off the scoreboard. It was a real nice shot. And then for him to snub it, it almost leaves a bitter taste on what was clearly the most positive day for Delgado this year.
Yeah, a very good day for Delgado, a good day for the Mets, a 6-3 win. And it's very interesting. The Mets right now, you know, third place, the Florida Marlins atop the NL East. And then you also have injuries. Brian Schneider is hurt for the Mets. I mean, you know, hopefully for the Mets that, you know, Delgado's coming out of it, but Schneider is hurt. Ryan Church looks really good. What's your opinion of Ryan Church so far?
Yeah, I've been really impressed with him. I mean, he's someone that, you know, I've only seen, you know, whenever the Nationals play the Mets, or, you know, and just looking at stats, he always seemed like someone who really killed right-handed pitchers. I mean, he always, you know, was a big doubles guy. So I did like him, the acquisition, but I mean, he's been better than I definitely ever envisioned. And he's hitting left-handers too. I mean, I think from a Mets perspective, you've definitely got to be happy with what he's turned into so far. And you touched on injuries. I mean, Schneider's in the hospital still with that infection. A little, freaky that what's going on there. They say he's going to be released tomorrow, and he'll be back at the ballpark. Probably won't play again until, you know, Tuesday, Wednesday at the earliest. But even worse is Moises Alou. I mean, they told us today, Omar Minaya, the general manager, told us today that Alou, the swelling that he's felt in his ankle that's kept him out of the last 2 days, they actually think it might be a fracture in his ankle, which, you know, Minaya was trying to put a good spin on it and said, you know, it's possible he could still, he might still be able to play with a fracture, but I've never heard of anything like that. So he's coming to New York tomorrow. He's going to have tests with the doctors. If they find a fracture in his ankle, I would expect him to be out another month or two, and that's bad news because, you know, especially with Delgado, you don't know what you're going to get out of him right now. I'm sure the Mets were super excited to get a loose bat in there, number five, even bat Church six, and you can drop Delgado to the seven. But right now, it's questionable when that's going to happen.
One more Met question, then we'll move on to the Yankees. Just, you know, Willie Randolph's getting, you know, mixed opinions pretty much from year to year. What's your overall opinion of Willie Randolph so far this year?
You know, I think so far this year he's done fine. I mean, it is hard to judge a manager's work early in the season just because so much of what the manager does is about weathering the storms. So it's hard to really judge a manager until maybe like 40, 50 games in to see if they've weathered that losing streak, see if they've weathered, you know, how they've reacted to losing after a winning streak. But that's I think Willie with the arrow squarely on his back. I mean, obviously a poor start. If they were, you know, if they go 18 and 25 at the 43 game mark, I mean, I'm sure you know questions about his job security would seriously be up there. But I mean, I think he's done fine. They've weathered you know some bad stretches, nothing major. But you know, they've shown glimpses of good. They've shown glimpses of bad. I mean, I think this next I think the first real test for Willie is going to be this next, you know, maybe 10 to 20 games. I mean, that Friday night loss to Atlanta was tough. But then they came back and they beat Hudson yesterday. They beat Smoltz today. I mean, those are positives. It shows character in the team. And now I think it's going to come up in these next 10, 20 games. We're going to see that first true test of how's Willie's 2008 going.
Yeah, very interesting. Now, flipping over to the other team in New York, the New York Yankees, Qingming Wang pitched a gem today, but he's really the only pitcher that has been doing that for the Yankees. When you look at their rotation, their two young guys, Phil Hughes and Ian Kennedy, have been pitching horribly. Mike Mussina has not been pitching great. Pettit's been doing pretty well. How much do you regret not getting Santana now if you're a Yankee, if you're in the Yankee front office?
Yeah, I mean, and Santana was only, I mean, Santana's a I've flip-flopped. I mean, I admit it. I flip-flopped like 10 times on this one because it's like, on one hand, you get up Hughes, who has shown potential, and now it's, again, we've seen prospects fail many times, and Santana's the real deal. But you're giving up Hughes, and then you'd have to, you know, spend basically $150 million. That's a lot, without me saying that. But so I've gone back and forth whether they it was the right move to get him or not. Obviously, in the short term, they need him, without a doubt. Do they need him in the long term? And that's going to be the deciding factor of whether it's a good trade or not. You know, going back to this, you know, the pitching that you talked about, I mean, this is, I think if you were to paint the worst-case scenario, this is it. I mean, Kennedy has been nibbling. He has not been throwing strikes consistently, and that's been the opposite of what the book is on him. Hughes has been seemingly trying too hard, and he's got such great stuff, that, and we've seen it glimpses of it last year, that, you know, when he's going so well, you forget he's 21, and then when he pitches like he has been this year, you say, you have to remind yourself that, you know, this kid's 21. It's hard to really expect him to do, you know, much consistently this year in his first full year in the majors. And it also makes you wonder whether they need more time in the minors, and that's not the worst thing. And on top of that, Mussina, you know, there's still major questions whether he has much left. You know, he has one good start, then he'll follow up with two or three bad ones, and I mean, Lord knows every Yankee fan never wants to see him pitch to Manny Ramirez again. And then, you know, Pettit's been a little shaky, and you know what? He's allowed to. I mean, everybody trusts that he's going to be there in the end, but, I mean, there's so much pressure on him and Long to be extraordinarily good because of how bad everybody else has been. I mean, it's a tough spot right now.
And to make matters even worse, the New York Yankees bullpen, Farnsworth will just put on the DL. Brian Bruni's probably out for the season. I know Jabba pitched today, but I know he had a hamstring strain. But the bullpen does not look really good. Do you think the Yankees will be looking for a bullpen guy with the, you know, inconsistencies and injuries to the bullpen?
Yeah, without a doubt, they're going to have to. I mean, I didn't even know that Farnsworth was placed on the DL. He had something. I remember I saw that he slipped off the mound the other night with his he said something about his elbow being bothering him. And whenever you hear someone talking about his elbow, I mean, that's definitely a concern. So, you know, and Bruni's obviously, you know, seems like he's out for the year. You know, Jabba just had the hamstring, and you do have an 8th and 9th inning guy who are just, you know, dynamite in Jabba and Mariano. But now the fact that you lose Bruni, the fact that Farnsworth is injured, and, you know, who's the next the guy in there? Is it little Troy Hawkins? I mean, I think it makes it harder now to move Jabba into the rotation. I mean, that's the biggest question here. And now it becomes even harder because in the past it was like, well, maybe Bruni can eat those innings. You know, maybe Farnsworth can finally pitch up to his potential. And then you can consider bringing Jabba into the rotation, which I think the Yankees obviously very much want to do because of how poor their starting pitching has been this year so far. But now it's like, you know, you're stealing from your bullpen to help your rotation, or are you going to hurt your rotation to help your bullpen? So I think without a doubt the Yankees are going to be in the trade market. Is it for a starter? Is it for a reliever? I think it's going to be for whatever kind of pitching is out there, because right now how the Yankees do this year, it's going to be all about their pitching.
And I'm glad you brought up Jabber Chamberlain, because what I want to say about him is that sometimes he looks bad in, and I know you have to go, but sometimes he looks bad in second inning appearances, and I don't know if he could transition into a starter. And also, if he were to transition to a starter, would they have to send him down to the minor leagues, you know, just to work and be able to pitch more innings? And if that was the case, then you lose your ace man. I mean, so I don't even know if moving Jabber there would work in the first place.
Yeah, you bring up a great point, and that's the point that people really have not been talking about, is that they're going to have to send them down to the minor leagues, and they admit this. They're going to have to send them to the minor leagues and stretch them out. It's not like, you know, in the middle of July, they can say to Jabba, okay, you know, you're going to start, you know, you pitched eighth inning last night, we'll give you 4 days off, and then you're going to start. No, he needs to work his way out. He needs to stretch his arm out, so he's going to have to pitch, go out to the minors and pitch 3 innings, and then another start of 4 innings, another start of 5 innings. It's probably going to take 3 weeks to stretch his arm out. And not only that, not only do you lose your eighth inning guy and the best pitcher perhaps on your entire team, you know, and you're going to lose him from not even having him on the roster for the weeks, but the reason they have this inning limit on him, they have 140 innings, and it's not like those innings in the minors are not going to count. Those innings are going to count too. So it's like now all of a sudden you're wasting innings against minor league hitters. I mean, so it's such a flawed plan in so many regards. I really believe this year, leave him alone. Let him be the eighth inning guy. Go out, find a star, do whatever you can. Find Freddie Garcia. Make a trade for someone who's, you know, having a good year, and maybe a free agent at the end of the year. Do whatever you can. But you have a lockdown 8th-inning guy. You have a lockdown 9th-inning guy. You know, stick with that strength. And you bring up another great point, is that Jabba, you know what? I mean, I'm not ready to say he's not going to be a good starter, but I saw him in spring training. He definitely didn't look like the same pitcher as in the 8th-inning. When he comes out of the bullpen, he looks like he's, like, you know, guns blazing. He's all fired up. And when he's a starter, it looks like he's, like, almost subconsciously holding something back. And that's not the Jabba Chamberlain that's been so successful in the major league. So I'm not convinced. I'm not ready to say he's not going to be a good starter, but I'm not convinced he's definitely going to be a lights out starter like he is in the bullpen. So, and I don't think finding out in August is the right thing for Yankees to do.
All right, Jim, I know that you have somewhere to go. So again, thank you very much for coming on the show again. We always appreciate the bomb back buzz that you bring to this show. And
well,
I'm
sorry about that. I really do appreciate you guys having me on. I really do enjoy it. And, you know, definitely call anytime.
Thank you very much. And
we'll definitely take you up on that offer.
Great.
Have a nice night.
All right. That was Newsday sports writer Jim Bombach making a 5th appearance on the show. Now, if you came in, you know, mid-interview, he was here. He was actually on the line prior to the show. We were talking to him for a couple of minutes before, so he was here right at Showstar, right at 8 o'clock p.m. sharp. So if you missed it, listen to the archive show. He's on immediately when the show starts.
He's been on 12.5% of our shows.
He's been on a lot. He's really a nice guy, and I put him in one of the top 3 nicest guys, and I never ranked them. But all these 3 guys I rank the nicest, they've all been on our show. And the 3 nicest guys are Kenny Albert. He's been on our show twice. And he's just the nicest guy, quick email responses. You know, he does great on the show, of course. Jim Bombach, who was just here. And then the other nicest guy, he was on our show only once, was Bruce Beck. But the only reason I say he's really nice is, I mean, he did a great job when he came on our show. And he actually called us, Evan, if you remember, 15 minutes prior to the show, just to have a conversation with us. And, I mean, that was extremely nice of him to do that. So, I mean, those 3 guys are the nicest guys. And Kenny Albert, he doesn't publicize any of his contact information, but Bruce Beck and Jim Bombach, their emails are out there, and they're very nice guys. So, you know, any listeners out there, feel free to talk to them. I mean, they are really unbelievable people. And also, you will notice in our show description that we have it at 90 minutes. Jim Bombach originally was going to give us more time, but he did have something to attend to at 8:30 at the last second. That's why we made it 90 minutes. We were hoping to have a good 30 to 45-minute discussion with Jim Bombach, so that wasn't the case. I don't think we'll have a 90-minute show. We'll probably cut it short. But there is a lot to talk about, and I know we asked Jim Bombach a lot of stuff, but I still want to go back. You know, Jim didn't like to get into detail about the players. I want to talk about the draft picks a little bit more, talk about the Ranger series a little bit more in detail. You know, we had to do things very generally because he didn't give a lot of time. So there is still a lot to get to. And also, we'll take your phone calls or, you know, if you want to contact us about the show. I was not on AOL Instant Messenger during the interview. I didn't want to get distracted with anybody, so I'll go on the AOL Instant Messenger right now. But prior to that, if you have a Blog Talk Radio account, you just simply talk to us in our Blog Talk Radio web chat. The other way to get in contact with us is to pick up the phone and call us at 718-508-9443. And now you can contact us on AOL Instant Messenger at gmen1021-1780. And during off-show hours, you can contact us, Sport7 with Mark and Evan at yahoo.com. We're going to take a quick commercial break. Again, thank you to Jim Bombach. We will be right back.
Why is Sport7 with Mark and Evan the best sports radio show for you to tune into? We've had Newsday sports writer Jim Bombach on our show.
The baseball season is so long, and then it's long enough where you can play so poorly for, you know, we're not talking, 2 weeks here. They were playing poorly for over a month.
NHL.com's Evan Grossman has been on our show.
This weren't this unstoppable force that everybody thought they were after winning all the season.
And then the Rangers are actually a little bit better against him than the Islanders were. They weren't quite as physical, and I don't think the Rangers' defense is as good as the under them, but...
We have also had New York Mets beat writer from the New York Post, Mark Hale, on our show.
The Mets not just being a good team or a competitive team, but the Mets being consistently over the last year and a half one of the two or three best teams in baseball.
And, of course, we've had New York Rangers radio broadcaster and Fox announcer Kenny Albert on our show.
Back-to-back, Ramirez, Rule, Veritek, off the rookie Chase Wright, is making only his second career start. Four consecutive Red Sox home runs in the third inning.
We have even had NBC sports anchor Bruce Beck on our show.
And now the guy that was the stable guy, Mark and Evan, is gone, Joe Torre. And now it looks again like there's a big Steinbrenner, you know, who's running the show, and that's Hank. And I think he's the guy that's got his dad's personality in terms of a little bit of a temper. And who knows what's going to happen here with all these free agents.
In addition, we've had Yankees beat writer for MLB.com, Brian Hoke, on our show.
You know, if the Yankees falter like they did in the first half, I could see a real situation where they're in third or even as low as fourth. Probably not fourth, but I could see a situation where the Yankees finish in third place.
And the list just continues on. We have also had New York Mets beat writer from the New York Daily News, Adam Rubin, on our show.
I don't think they're a lot by any stretch. I think they're certainly the favorite in the NL East. Certainly injuries can undermine the Mets, and they're certainly the oldest team in baseball, so it's certainly susceptible to that.
You're listening to Sports Heaven with Mark and Evan. It's the best sports radio show the Internet can handle.
Okay, welcome back to the show. We just had Newsday sports writer Jim Baumbeck join us. If you missed it, check out the archive. He did a great job. Of course, he was pressed for time, so everything was kind of like a general overview. So I want to rewind a little bit, and we do have extra time scheduled for tonight's show. I don't think we'll use it all, but it's there, so we have time to do a little bit of a rewind. So I'm going to do that, and I want to go back to the draft. Of course, the Giants and Jets. The draft concluded today, and I want to talk about in detail the first two picks for the Jets and Giants, and then we'll talk, generally about the other guys they got, and I'll do, with the third picks on, I'll do it kind of the bomb back way, just strictly look at position and talk about, what that does for the team. So let's go back to the New York Giants' first pick in Kenny Phillips. He's a safety, and, as we mentioned before, they have safeties. They have Butler, and they have Sammy Knight, who they picked up in the offseason. They also have Michael Johnson, who was a rookie last year. I don't really know if he's going to make his way into the picture, but I'll tell you about Kenny Phillips for those of you who are not familiar with him or with the draft. And he was probably the number one safety in the draft. So in that sense, it was a good pick for the New York Giants. We know how weak their secondary is. They did win the Super Bowl last year, of course, the Giants, but, at times we did see the weaknesses in their secondary, so I thought the safety was good. And, according to a lot of people, he was the number one safety this year. The safety class was kind of weak, and he excels in making big plays and big hits. And they say he's very fast. We could also transition into cornerback. Of course, the Giants have a million of those, too. They have, last year, the rookie Darren Barnett. They still have Kevin Dockery, Sam Madison, R.W. McQuarters, Jeffrey Pope, who did well down the stretch, Aaron Ross, who was really unbelievable last year as a rookie. I mean, Corey Webster. They have a lot of cornerbacks, and then their second pick was a cornerback. We'll get to that in a second. So, even though Kenny Phillips can transition into a cornerback with his speed, I think that he'll stay as a safety because they need that position a little more. They're lacking that. And I don't like the way James Butler plays over the top. I have a feeling Kenny Phillips is going to win a spot. And he does have weaknesses as a cornerback. He's not good at reading routes, and he's not good with the play actions. So, safety really is the right position for him. And that's where he played in Miami. And He also plays with the mentality of a linebacker, so he can jump right on the ball, follow everything very easily, and didn't play as well last year as he did in 2006. But, you know, overall, I think a pretty good pick, and he was the number one safety in this draft, so a good job by the Giants there. And then, you know, I just went through those list of cornerbacks, but that didn't stop the Giants from picking another one anyway, as in the second round, their second overall pick, they took Terrell Thomas out of Southern California, who's very well built. He's a very physical player, but doesn't always perform to his athletic ability. And he likes playing up in the box. He likes, you know, blitzing, and he likes getting to the quarterback. So that could be good, you know, bring him in a few plays in that sense to put pressure on, in addition to the great front four that the Giants have. Last year, the Giants led the league in sacks with 53. So, I mean, and they still have that core of players. They still have Strahan and Umanyora, and, you know, and Tuck when Umanyora has those cramps and, you know, whatever. And so I think that's good that Terrell Thomas can even add to that pressure that he loves to play in the box. And he has a very big wingspan. He has long arms, try and trick receivers, force them into a certain route. So I, you know, Terrell Thomas also is very good. You know, not one of the top cornerbacks, obviously. He was taken, you know, late in the second round. Giants had the last pick after winning the Super Bowl. But you know, a decent cornerback, nonetheless. But I don't know where he's going to be in the season because again, you know, Kevin Dockery, Sam Mastin, R.W. McCorders, Aaron Ross, Corey Webster, those are like, you know, the main guys, names that you constantly see. So I don't know, you know, maybe he'll be a practice squad player. I don't know if he'll make it out of training camp this season, but maybe sometime in the future he'll be good for them. And I want to move into the New York Jets.
Well, one thing before you move into the Jets.
Go ahead.
Let me say something. One thing that you saw from last season is defense really wins games. Defense for the Giants won the Super Bowl for them and got them through all those playoff games. So, you know, you were saying how they drafted those players that they already have depth in those positions. But I think last year, after seeing how many injuries they had and how effective a good defense is, that you can never have enough depth in those positions.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Injuries is something that plagues the Giants all the time. So it is important to have the depth, and I mean, as you know, they have much more depth in the cornerback position. On their depth chart, they technically have listed about, you know, eight cornerbacks. They only have listed three safeties, so I think the safety was certainly the better pick, but it's definitely still good to have that depth at cornerback. And I don't know if Terrell Thomas can make the transition to safety, just like, you know, Kenny Phillips might be able to make the transition to cornerback, but you know, something we'll have to see. But I think there's a better chance of the Giants' first pick, Kenny Phillips, having, you know, coming out of training camp with a job rather than Terrell Thomas. And actually, since you kept me on the Giants, I do want to stay on the Giants for a second because I just want to briefly go over the rest of the draft picks, and then we'll move into the New York Jets. After that, they took a controversial wide receiver in Mario Manningham. Mario Manningham out of Michigan, he's very good. He has speed. There's a couple problems with him, though. Mario Manningham sometimes has trouble breaking away from defenders, as well as he's one of those players that carries those, you know, background issues. He had marijuana addiction. And, you know, he's one of those problem players. But, he's a big-time player. He's very good. I don't know how much those other problems will plague him. I think he can make a good transition into the NFL. I'm saying that he's kind of okay, but, you know, when the big play needs to be made, I think Mario Manningham can do it, and it's kind of similar to that of David Tyree, who you just say, you know, whatever, he's a wide receiver, okay, but, you know, he probably made the biggest play, you know, one of the biggest Super Bowl plays ever with that catch on the helmet. So, Mario Manningham certainly can make a good transition. Of course, the Giants have a lot of wide receivers and a lot of young ones, too. I mean, you had Steve Smith, who was a rookie last year, and he helped them so much down the stretch. You have the very clutch Monty Toomer, and you have Plaxico Burress, of course. And I think it's actually good that the Giants have all those receivers because, you know, because Manningham isn't one of those guys that's going to, you know, he's not going to be that number one guy. As I said, he does have trouble breaking away. So the fact that he could be working next, you know, I don't know how much longer Amani Toomer has in the league, but it would be better if he's a number two, number three, number four wide receiver where he's not looked upon to be the number one guy. And I think Manningham actually would fit really well with the type of player that he is. He would fit really well into like a third wide receiver role and that they're having the pressure. So, you know, an interesting pick right there. And again, for those of you just tuning in, I'm looking in our Blog Talk Radio web chat, and people are asking, is Jim Baumbach on yet? And again, Jim Baumbach, he had somewhere to go at 8:30. He was on the line immediately when the show started, so if you listen back to the archive, Jim Baumbach will be on the show immediately when the show starts. He was here from 8:20. From 8 o'clock till about 8:30, 8:25, that's when we let him go. So again, you can listen back to Jim Baumbach on the archive.
And for future shows, if you guys want to hear our guests generally come on in the very beginning of the show. So if you want to hear them, tune in right away, because I think the latest a guest has come on is 5 minutes in. So, yeah.
Yeah, you bring up a good point. Definitely tune in for our guests early. But again, you know, they don't go away. The shows don't go away. You can listen to all the archive shows either on blogtalkradio.com/sportsheaven with Mark and Evan. You can listen to them on our official site at sportsheavenwithmarkandevan.webs.com. And the newest thing, it's just a couple of weeks old. You know, you're not near a computer, but you have your cell phone on you. It takes a little while because it's through RSS feed. It might actually take a few days, I noticed, but if you call 1-212-404-5633, you can actually hear our most recent show. Now, on our official site, we try and update the archive immediately. On Blog Talk Radio, it takes, you know, almost seconds, and it's up. With the phone, it could take a couple of hours, even, you know, a day at least. But, I mean, you could always listen back to the archive. They don't
sure
go.
All of you are going to call up later and listen to the show.
Well, it's not going to be up on the phone, but it'll certainly be on the website. I'll try and get it up, but it'll always be on Blog Talk Radio. Just continuing on with the New York Giants picks, I don't know as much about the rest of the picks except for one of them. I'll get to that in a second. But the next two people they took after the wide receiver Mario Manningham was they took two linebackers. In the fourth round, they took Brian Kell, and in the fifth round, they took Jonathan Goff, and I'm going to be 100% honest with you. I didn't read up on them. I know absolutely nothing about them, but I do know that they're both linebackers, and, you know, they lost Kavika Mitchell in the offseason, and I feel that the Giants did a good job in taking the defensive backs in Kenny Phillips and Terrell Thomas, and I love the fact that they took linebackers. They're going to need linebackers. That's a place where they don't have that great depth in. You know, they have a lot of them. They took Zach Diossi in last year's draft. You know, you have Chase Blackburn. And, of course, you know, Masaya Kiwanuka, who was hurt. Antonio Pierce, of course. Jairus Wilkinson, who's, you know, a few years into his career. So they do have depth at linebacker. But, I mean, you have guys that you've probably never heard of. Rory Johnson, you know, practice squad player. Tank Daniels, you know, Danny Clark. So you have depth, but you don't have much there. So it was important to get those picks. I don't think Chase Blackburn is that good. Jairus Wilkinson has proven to be pretty good. So you have Pierce Wilkinson, you know, Kiwanuka. But I do like the two picks and linebackers there for the New York Giants. I thought that was key. And then here's one of those picks that you're kind of like, it's a steal, but it's kind of like, why? Because they had two sixth-round picks, and the first one that they took, 198th overall, was Andre Woodson, who's a quarterback out of Kentucky, and he's a very good quarterback. But, you know, you always want to have a good backup quarterback. The Giants did get David Carr, And, I mean, I don't know if anybody thinks any highly at all of Jared Lorenzen, a.k.a. the Hefty Lefty, or anything of Anthony Wright. But Andre Woodson's he's a good quarterback, but they have Eli Manning, who just drove the Giants to the Super Bowl. And, you know, you almost feel bad for a guy like Andre Woodson because he might earn his way into a backup job with the Giants. I could definitely see that. But, unless Eli gets hurt, he's not going to earn a start. But why is Andre Woodson good for the Giants? You know, if Giants fans are wondering, well, why would you get Andre Woodson? You have Eli Manning. If you need to make a trade down the line, Andre Woodson is a very good quarterback. You may say, well, 198th overall in the sixth round. He's very good. He's a great quarterback. And I have a feeling that down the line, it could be as soon as next year, this year, I don't even know. But Andre Woodson would be good trade bait. You know, they could trade Andre Woodson away and, get some good draft picks or good players in return. And then the last pick, of course, this is no surprise. They took Robert Henderson, who's a defensive end. The Giants have to take a defensive end every year. It's just something they like to do. For all you Giants fans, if Umenyora, Tuck, Strahan, and Tolleson wasn't enough for you, now you have another defensive end in Robert Henderson. The Giants just love taking defensive ends, so it doesn't really surprise me. They just do it all the time. All right, we technically can go for another 43 minutes, and there is still a lot to talk about because I want to talk about the Jets picks, and then I also want to get into hockey and baseball, and we haven't had a show since Isaiah Thomas was fired to the Knicks, so I want to get into that as well. So let's talk about the New York Jets picks right now. All right, so the New York Jets, who did they take? Number one, Vernon Golston. Now, here's the deal with Vernon Golston. I'll give you the full rundown of him. We didn't get the opportunity to do that with Jim Baumbach. He was taken, overall sixth. He's a very good defensive end, and his strength, he's very explosive. He's very strong. He's one of those guys who's very fast and also excels in the bull rush. Which, usually the bull rush guys are the bigger guys that, can't explode off the line as well. But, Vernon Golston is a guy who's very fast, has a great first step, and can use the bull rush. Plus, he can get around blockers with that speed. And he could come up with a lot of big plays. I think he'll certainly help. But the thing with him, that scouts question with Vernon Golston is that he doesn't always play up to his full potential for some reason. And, I don't really know what the reason is, but he needs some kind of a motivation, it seems like, sometimes with Vernon Golston. And that's something that the Jets are going to have to deal with. Of course, we spoke about the defensive ends that they already have. They have Sean Ellis. They have Kenyon Coleman. So, is Vernon Golston going to earn himself a starting job out of training camp? I can't tell you that now. I haven't really seen him play. But, defensive end is not something that the Jets have a lot of. And I just mentioned Sean Ellis and Coleman. And then the only guy that they have listed on their roster is Mike DeVito. So you have the Giants who now have five defensive ends. The Jets now have four defensive ends with Vernon Golston there. So Vernon Golston, I think, can earn himself a job. Come in if Sean Ellis needs a rest. He'll probably make the team out of training camp. But Vernon Golston was a good pick for the New York Jets. They're going to need a big defense. We spoke with Jim Baumbach before. We talked about the quarterback situation. So it's going to be very important for the Jets to have the defense. And Vernon Golston is very good about that. So that was a good pick from the New York Jets. And then the second pick that they took, we'll talk about him in detail, and then we'll do general. And again, for those of you just tuning in now, Jim Baumbach joined us from 8 o'clock to 8:25. So if you missed that, go back on the archives. It'll be up later tonight, sports7withmarkandevan.webs.com. I want to talk about Dustin Keller. So we didn't get to go in enough detail with him, with Jim Baumbach. And Dustin Keller is is an offensive player. He's a tight end. The Jets have tight ends already as well, you know, in Bubba Franks and Chris Baker. And they say he's undersized and that he's not a great blocker. He's still, you know, he's pretty much only good for a receiver. So, you know, I don't know how many times they're going to bring him in. You want to be able to block, you know, you want to have good protection for your quarterbacks, Pennington, Clemens, whoever it is. And Dustin Keller will not provide that for you, but he will provide good hands for them. So, you know, he's kind of a threat going out for a pass, but if he stays in, Dustin Keller's not really going to do anything for you. And as Jim Baumbach said, you know, it certainly was a questionable pick by the New York Jets. And then
most picks are by the New York Jets, questionable picks. They have not had much success in the past in the draft. They usually draft busts. I mean, the Bickerstaff Ferguson, I guess, has done fairly well, but other than that, they haven't really picked many good players in the draft. And going back to their first pick in Golston, I don't really like the pick at all. I mean, I think there are a lot better players available with the number 6 pick of the draft, and he didn't even start playing football until his sophomore year of high school. He doesn't know the game very well. It's going to take him a while to really learn the game, and he's not the most athletic person in the world. He's not very quick on his feet. I mean, I hear when he takes off his shirt, he looks like Tarzan. They're saying during the draft that he's very well built, but he doesn't know how to use his ability. And you saw some of the highlights of him going crazy. But I think part of the reason that he was able to be so successful on Ohio State is because Long was on the other side of his line. And a lot of the offensive line would cover Long, and he would be able to get a lot of the sacks that he did. So, yes, maybe he'll be successful. I don't really like the pick too much. Then going into their second pick and drafting the tight ends, again, what are they doing? He supposedly, like you said, Mark, he isn't good. What were you saying? He isn't good at reading. He's not good at blocking.
He's not good at blocking. He's not a good blocking tight end at all, and he's small. So even if he goes down the field as a threat, he's kind of, you know, the tight ends are usually the big guys that stick out. He's undersized and can't block, so.
So what are the positives in him?
Well, he has good hands. I mean, he's, you know, what you have with a tight end usually is.
Why isn't he a wide receiver then?
Well, that's what I'm going to say, because the thing is with tight ends, the reason that they're not wide receivers usually is because they're bigger, which he's not, but they're also slower. And I think he has more of a tight end-like speed, and that's why he wouldn't make the good transition into a wide receiver, because he wouldn't be able to break away from any defenders. So, you know, you're right. You kind of say, well, what are the positives? He's right. I mean, you say, you know, what are the positives? And, yeah, he's small and slow.
That's another classic Jet draft pick.
I mean, I can't tell you his exact speed, but when you think of a tight end, you know, they're not as fast as a receiver. That's usually why they're the tight end, plus they're bigger.
Do you have over there what he ran on the 40?
I don't have it. I could see if I could find it. But while I do that, I mean, the thing is the tight ends, they're the bigger, slower wide receivers is what they are.
You had it in that booklet that you had with your two giant players highlighted.
He ran a 4.58 in the 40.
Not horrible.
That's not horrible. So you know, again, I was just making an assumption because usually the tight ends are slower, but, you know, he's an undersized guy. He doesn't really block. He's more of a threat when going out for a pass. So I don't know, you know, you can't bring Dustin Keller into a formation where you only have one tight end. You have to bring him into a formation where you have two, where one stays in the block and one goes out to pass, and Dustin Keller has to be the one to go and receive a pass. Now, the other picks that we have, just generally speaking, you have the cornerback, Dwight Lowry. And, you know, cornerback-wise, the Jets, again, you know, not a lot of them. You have Hank Petit. You have David Barrett, Andre Woolfolk, and Drew Coleman. So I think a cornerback was a good pick here. I don't really have a big scouting report on Dwight Lowry, So I don't really know what he's like, but I do like the fact that they picked a cornerback. I think they need that again. I said the Jets are going to need that defense with the quarterback troubles. And then, of course, their next pick, to no surprise, was a quarterback, Eric Ainge. I don't think I really have to get into detail with the quarterbacks. We already spoke a lot about them. I don't know if he'll, you know, earn a job. I don't know who he is, but you need to have a quarterback there. And they picked Marcus Henry, a wide receiver. And the final pick in the seventh round was Nate Gardner, an offensive tackle. And, you know, I like the pick of an offensive tackle. It'll put more protection to whomever the quarterback is. And it'll help in some sense. Again, I don't know the scouting report on Nate Gardner. He could be terrible, but which is possible looking at the history of the Jets draft, as you mentioned before. So, you know, I don't really know. But you need somebody up there to protect the quarterbacks. And that pretty much sums up the draft. And we have just over a half hour remaining in the show, so we will just continue right along here. And again, if you want to contact us throughout the show, there's a couple of ways to do that. Call us, 718-508-9443. If you have a Blog Talk Radio account, talk to us in our Blog Talk Radio web chat. Or using AOL Instant Messenger, talk to us at GMEN 1021 1780, and you know, feel free. We'll take your calls, talk about any New York sports that you want, and we'll be happy to take your call again. If you missed it, Jim Baumbach, Newsday sports writer, he was here from 8 o'clock to 8:25. So listen back to the archive for that. All right, let's move into hockey now with the New York Rangers. So after a five-game win over the New Jersey Devils in the first round, are starting off very poor in the second round. We did talk about it already with Jim Baumbach. You know, we pretty much got everything we wanted to say in, you know, the 3-0 lead and then losing it in game one, and then I'll consider today's loss practically a 1-0 loss, which was really bad. The officiating, I don't like in the series at all. I didn't like the penalty call on Marty Straka in the first game, and I didn't like today with Marty Straka. The puck went in the net, but the referee lost sight of the puck beforehand and blew the whistle. And looking at the replay, it was clear that Marc-Andre Fleury did not have control of that puck. So it's not like it was underneath his pad and then it was pushed through. I mean, that puck was loose. It went in, and a bad job. But we did pretty much cover the New York Rangers already. But if you missed anything, have any questions, feel free to contact us that way. One thing we didn't get to with Jim Baumbach that I want to talk to, and then we'll head back to some of the things in baseball that we didn't get to. Isaiah Thomas was fired. Lots of mixed feelings in the media because Donnie Walsh is keeping him with the team. He's not going to have any interaction at all. He's kind of like an advisor to Donnie Walsh, just kind of reporting back to Donnie Walsh. I don't really know if that's a real job or, you know, because he has no official title. So, you know, I don't know what that means. I don't know what, you know, if that's anything significant. But, Evan, what are your thoughts that Isaiah Thomas is still with the New York Knicks?
I'm surprised that he still stays with them. I mean, I'm not surprised that Walsh tells him that he can still be a member of the organization because they still feel like he did his best to build a team, and it would just be wrong to just get rid of him, just fire him completely. And so they still want him in the organization just because he did try to help the team, but I don't understand how Isaiah Thomas, with his ego, can just still be like, oh, well, you can't do anything, really, but you can still hang out with us. That's pretty much what they're saying. They're demoting him from the guy to, like, the towel boy, pretty much.
Well,
and you know, I don't understand why he would want to stay with the organization.
Well, I don't know if he's as meaningless as a towel boy, but the thing is, I think they kept him, you know, I know that you don't have a problem that they kept it to his job. They kept him there because even if they fired him, they still owed him money. So they want to have a reason to pay him the money. But the thing is, if Isaiah doesn't stay with the team, here's the thing. Isaiah's, you know, he's shown his failure both as a coach and a president. So if he doesn't stay with the Knicks, he doesn't have a job. And it's going to be very hard for Isaiah Thomas to find a job somewhere else, because after looking at what he did with the Knicks, which was absolutely nothing except getting into fights with players and losing games, you know, he's not going to find a job anywhere else. So Isaiah Thomas knows if he stays with the Knicks, he has something to do. He has a job.
Maybe he'll quit and he'll join us on Sports Heaven with Mark and Evan and Isaiah.
I don't think I want him on the show, actually, you know, but, you know.
I'm pretty sure if he wanted to come on the show.
But my point is Isaiah's reputation is completely tarnished, and I don't think anybody wants him. And Isaiah, obviously, even if he was fired, even if he was, fired completely, he would still be getting paid his money. But I think the fact of the matter is he doesn't want to be out of a job, although once the money is fully paid, he probably will be gone altogether. Again, I don't know what his actual job is going to be. I don't know what he's actually doing. So, you know, I don't know if the Knicks will like, I don't know, if maybe, I mean, Donnie Walsh likes Isaiah Thomas. They're kind of good friends. So, you know, that's another part of it. I don't know if he'll, because Evan, he's not going to be a towel boy, as you said.
Obviously he's not going to be a towel boy, but it's just right. Like, if you're the boss of something, you're the president and the head coach, and then all of a sudden you're just part of the organization, that would feel horrible.
Well, that's the thing. I think that there's something that we don't understand, because the problem is we don't know his exact job. He doesn't have an exact title. Donnie Walsh just said that Isaiah Thomas will report directly to him. I think Isaiah Thomas, honestly, will probably be doing some scouting. Maybe he'll look at, like, the international leagues, look at players, and, you know, tell Donnie Walsh the players he likes. I mean, that's the only thing I could think he'll be doing, some type of a scouting role. But, you know, if they like whatever it is he's doing, if it is being a scout, then, you know, they'll keep him there, and Isaiah Thomas will still have a job, and I think that's the reason he's staying there, is now he's still employed. And that's the big thing there. Now, also, moving back to baseball, one thing we didn't talk about with regards to the New York Yankees was the hitting, and we didn't really get into pitching with the New York Mets. So I want to talk about the pitching of the New York Mets, and I want to talk about the hitting of the New York Yankees. So let's start off with the New York Yankees and their hitting. And you have guys right now in Robinson Cano, Jason Giambi, and a leadoff hitter in Johnny Damon, who really isn't doing a good job at all. And, you know, I was hoping to ask Jim Baumeck what he thought about that. I could not. But I'll be glad to tell you what I think about that. And, you know, Jason Giambi, he's really, really off to a terrible start. I mean, if you look at the batting averages of these guys, I mean, Robinson Cano is batting 158, Jason Giambi is batting 177, and Johnny Damon, he's batting 275. You say, well, it's not terrible. You know, he has three home runs. He's a leadoff hitter, though. You like?
He got three hits yesterday, I think.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Johnny Damon's not off to he's not off to a terrible start. Personally, though, I'd like to see more out of a leadoff hitter. I'd like to see that average, you know, up in the 290, 300 range. You know, I want him to get more hits because he is that leadoff guy. He's supposed to be that contact hitter, and I think that Johnny Damon could step it up a notch, but really Robinson Cano and Jason Giambi, I don't know what is wrong with them. They really need to get out of it. I don't know when it's going to happen, but they can't keep it up for long because, you know, we spoke about it before. You have Mike Mussina, Ian Kennedy, and Phil Hughes who cannot pitch for their lives. Anyone who listens to the show consistently knows that I've been saying all year, even before it started, Mike Mussina will not get more than 8 wins. And I'm still sticking to it. He had a good start his last outing. He's pitching again tomorrow. And I don't think he's going to be able to have a good start again. And, you know, but again, those three pitchers not pitching well. The bullpen, Farnsworth on the DL, Brian Bruni out for the season. I mean, who do you have? Hawkins and Albaladejo? I mean, you don't have anybody in the bullpen. And then you need the Canoes and the Giambis. They need to get hits. How are you going to win games when you only have one starting pitcher that you could really rely on, another starting pitcher that you trust, and three starting pitchers that you have no clue what you're going to get out of them, and a bullpen that is non-existent? You need to have offense. And, you know, it's not like we don't know these guys. We know who Jason Giambi and Robinson Cano are. We've seen their potential. We know that they could be top hitters in the league, and they're not performing at all, and they really have to step it up. And, you know, I don't know how long that's going to take, but they better start soon because, you know, people are going down fast for the Yankees with these injuries. They're just falling away, and anyone who's struggling has to step it up. And that pretty much sums it up for the Yankees offense that I wanted to speak about. Evan, you have anything to add to that?
Pretty much summed it up.
All right, so then let's move on to the New York Mets. Go ahead.
The only thing I wanted to say with Yankees hitting is, one, Johnny Damon, I think he's coming back around, and just the main problem with the Yankees lineup is because they're never full strength. I mean, how many games a season have they had their complete lineup in the game? Not very many, because with injuries, Posada's been out a lot of the season, Jeter was injured, A-Rod had a baby, and he was injured. Who else was injured? Giambi was injured. A lot of injuries to the Yankees, and I think that's part of their struggle, is people are getting bounced around in the order, and they don't get into a flow of what it's supposed to be like, and that's why they're struggling.
You actually brought up a very good point. I completely forgot to mention it about Jorge Posada's injury. He played yesterday and apparently re-injured his shoulder, and it's apparently really bad. And they think he aggravated it. Yesterday, two guys attempted to steal, and he threw down to second base both times. And they think he re-aggravated his shoulder, and he's going to see Dr. Andrews in Alabama, I think it is. And when players go to see that guy, Dr. Andrews, it's usually because they're going to get surgery or it's some type of a major injury. You know, he's like a well-known doctor around Major League Baseball. You know, he's a very good doctor, but as I said, it's usually for surgery. So they think Jorge Posada is seriously hurt. And so, you know, I don't mind Jose Molina. We saw what Chad Mueller could do. He's actually not that bad offensively either. But you're right. I mean, the Yankees seem to not have that mean starting lineup that they want. And Joe Girardi, in his first year as manager, really has to make those adjustments. I mean, he's coming into a bad situation. But, you know, good call there, Evan, with Jorge Posada. I completely forgot to mention it. But I want to move on to the New York Mets, and then we'll close out the show. I didn't think we'd be able to make it 90 minutes after we shortened the interview with Jim Baumbach. And what we didn't mention, the Mets pitching staff looks pretty good. I'm especially starting. I'm pretty happy with it. You know, Mike Pelfrey and Figueroa are struggling just a little bit, but John Mean, of course, Johan Santana the other day, I think he had two hits. I mean, Santana helped the team both with his arm and his bat, and we said before the season that, you know, he's supposedly a good hitter, and he can hit. So, you know, Santana, Perez, and Mean, I mean, they've been doing a good job. All of their ERAs in the three area, Pelfrey and Figueroa, both have ERAs over four. So, I mean, a good job there. Billy Wagner, he still hasn't given up an earned run. So, you know, good job there by the back end. I think the Mets are looking pretty good right now with their pitching staff. Aaron Heilman, he's, you know, not so great there. Jorge Sosa, same thing. But, you know, you've got the good back end in Billy Wagner. And you always want to have that good with the closer. Same thing, the Yankees, Mariano Rivera hasn't given up an earned run yet. I believe he got his ninth save today, Mariano Rivera. And But I'm liking the pitching staff right now. Billy Wagner with 6 saves. I'm liking the way it looks for the Mets. As for the hitting, as we spoke about before, Delgado had the 2 home runs today. He's starting to come around. Beltran's off to a bit of a slow start. You know, David Wright, people were talking about him. Would he have the MVP-type season? He's not starting out with an MVP-type season. He's batting .292, though. You know, 4 home runs. He's not doing terrible, but... And then the impressive guy, Ryan Church, like we spoke with Jim Baumbach. But, you know, the Mets right now are in a little bit of a better situation than the Yankees are. But that pretty much sums it up. What we didn't talk about with the Knicks is the coaching. But I have a feeling that it's going to be Mark Jackson, Jeff Van Gundy, Donnie Walsh. They don't get along. You'll probably see Mark Jackson. He's kind of like a New York guy. But, again, I really don't know. And, Evan, anything to add?
You know, you said that the Mets are in better position than the Yankees right now. The Yankees are 1.5 games out of the division. I know you always like looking at the standings. So it's not like they're that out of it. The Boston's been struggling. I think they just lost 3 in a row. Did they win today? No, they lost today, so they lost their 4th in a row today.
Yeah, the Red Sox got swept by the Tampa Bay Rays.
Mm-hmm.
So the Yankees didn't fall behind in that sense. But, you know, you think about it, you know, you say the Yankees are only 1.5 games behind. They didn't, they're not looking that bad. But the thing is today you had Chin Ming Wong pitching, and he's 5-0 now. He's the guy that you know is really good. And, you know, they didn't need to use the bullpen today. They got 7 out of Wong and then went to Jabba Chamberlain and Moe. And that's what you always want to have. You know you're not going to get it. So, you know, the injuries to Farnsworth and Bruni, it didn't affect them today. And I think that now that you have the injuries and now you're in the part of the rotation where it's Mike Mussina, Ian Kennedy, and Phil Hughes, that's when you're going to start to need the bullpen, which is not there. And that's when the Yankees, I feel, are going to start falling behind. So if you look at it at this point in time right now, when the players just got injured and it hasn't really affected the team yet because, you know, they've only been out for, you know, at most 2-3 games, if any at all, you know, it hasn't affected them yet. But, when they get deeper into the starting rotation with Mike Mussina tomorrow, the team's going to look much worse. And I think they're going to fall further behind. So, you know, in that perspective, it doesn't look good. But as of right now, 9-10, you know, Sunday, April 27, 2008, they look fine. But I don't think I can't stay like that. I mean, with Cano and Giambi struggling, as we mentioned, and the starters and the bullpen, it can't. There's no way that with the depleted team, they could keep up. I can't see it.
You can also say that there's no way to go but up from here.
There's no way to what?
There's nowhere to go but up.
Well, you can say there's nowhere to go but up, but the Yankees right now don't have... Well, the Yankees right now don't have the talent or the ability. They don't have the players to go up. I mean...
I think they do. I think that Cano and Giambi...
Well, Cano and Giambi certainly.
Well, and...
Cano and Giambi, I'm not as concerned about. I mean, they'll come out of the slump. Cano is not going to finish with a 170 average. You know,
struggled the first half of the season.
Right, but the thing I'm more concerned about, what they don't have, is they don't have a bullpen. Farnsworth is gone, Bruni is gone. So you're putting all your trust. You know, if you need a middle innings guy, what you're going to need, because Mike Mussina, Ian Kennedy, and Phil Hughes are struggling, you're forced to go to Hawkins and Al Baladejo. And they're not going to get the job done. And that, you know, baseball teams are built around pitching. And that I'm telling you, that's really where the issue is. I mean, if you look at the offense, you might not be that concerned. You know, Posada being out, Posada hasn't played a lot this year. And the Yankees are getting wins. You know, I don't want to say you don't need them. It's not one of the bigger losses. It's the pitching staff where you're losing a lot. So, you know, you have to worry in that sense. All right, now I think we're just about ready to close out the show. Sports Heaven with Mark and Evan is a sports radio show created for informing the public of the latest sports news and insights. Our show is broadcast over the Internet through blogtalkradio.com from Jericho, New York. The views, comments, and statements of our interviews and guests do not necessarily reflect that of the hosts. We do not also claim ownership of any material used on the show. or sports show, including voiceovers, musical beds, instrumentation, effects, team logos, league, and team names otherwise stated. If there's anything you wish to remove from the show, email us, sports7withmarkandevin@yahoo.com. Email us at sports7withmarkandevin@yahoo.com for any other reason as well. Good comment, bad comment, you want to just talk sports, that's fine. Advertise with us, that's fine too. And also check out our official site, sports7withmarkandevin.webs.com. Hear all of our past shows, read about all of our past guests, watch videos, hear about upcoming shows. Lots of things to do there. That's sports7withmarkandevin.webs.com. It's Mark with a K. And tune in next week, same time, same place, same great show. It's Sports 7 with Mark and Evan live out of Jericho. I'm Mark Elliott.
And I'm Evan Randolph, and we'll see you next week.
Thank you, everybody, and we'll leave you with Sweet Caroline.
Where it began, I can't begin to knowing, but then I know it's growing strong. Wasn't the spring, and spring became the summer. Who'd have believed you'd come along? Hands, touching hands, reaching out, touching me, touching you. Don't seem so lonely. We fill it up with only two. And when I hurt, hurting runs off my shoulders. How can I hurt when holding you? One touching one.